That's an inside joke.
Can we tell them?
Sure.
Before the show, there used to be a restaurant next door. There's a restaurant that's not open, and sitting out on a table was a stack, easily 150, 200 tickets. Each ticket, face value, $80. To a two-day
VIP pass to the drag strip raceway over in Illinois.
Yeah, and I looked at him and I said, look at this. There's like 200 tickets here. We could give these away on the air or take how many you want. Well, no, you don't know, as Paul Harris would say, the rest of the story. So Tim calls the place to see, because we're sitting on a stack of 80 times, 200.
$8,000 worth of tickets.
Yeah. And Tim calls and goes, just kind of curious, what are the how much are the tickets? They go, they're free. So I don't know how they either printed them and nobody came or nobody bought tickets. So they just decided to just give them to everybody. But for just a second, we thought we're sitting on
some real money.
$8,000, maybe $16,000 worth of tickets. So you folks are lucky, because we could have messed with you and said, hey, we're giving you an $80 value. Well, we decided not to do that because it wouldn't have been nice, and we're nice. Now, Bertarelli. Marco Bertarelli, if you're listening, thank you for becoming part of this show. And thank your three brothers and all six of the other people in your family that work at that business. Because your business is exactly the kind of business that I like to have as part of this show. A family business that's been around for decades. You do what you do well, better than probably anybody else. I know that Bertarelli has one major competitor in the knife sharpening business. It's kind of like food suppliers. Restaurants are either supplied food by Sysco or Kuna. Those are the two big restaurant suppliers. On the knife sharpening business that I know of, there are two relevant competitors. But I'd never heard of the other one before until I asked Bertarelli, who's your competition? So the fact that I'd never even heard of the other one, and neither had anybody else that I talked to, tells me maybe Bertarelli is the window world of knife sharpening. But then when they came on board, I found out something else that I didn't have any idea they were into, and you probably didn't either, and that's PPE, personal protective equipment, which I mistakenly call personal protective equipment until a listener said, no, it's protective, not protection. And I was saying personal protection. Thank you to that listener, because I like to be corrected when I'm wrong. PPE, personal protective equipment. What does that mean? Well, it means masks and gloves and shields, those welder-looking face shields, and hand sanitizer and little foot booties, and you get the idea. That's personal protective equipment. Now, there are companies in the St. Louis area who don't know that Bertarelli has a warehouse full of that stuff. Isn't that sad? That tells me they're not AM and the PM. Because if they were, they'd know that Bertarelli has a surplus of all of that personal protective equipment. So you may just be an individual and you want a pack of masks for your home and your family. You may be a small business. You want them for your employees. Or you may be a huge business where you go through thousands of these things every year. They can accommodate all of you. A single person walking into their store, or a company representative calls and says, we need 6,000 masks. Can you help us? And their answer will be, come and get them. That's how big the warehouse is, and that's how much they have. Nobody knows. I don't know. You don't know how long we're going to have to endure this mask business, or hand sanitizer on your hands every 5 minutes. I don't know. But it's not going to be gone tomorrow. Not going to be gone in a week. It'll be around for a while. So you need to know where to get that stuff when you need it. And here's the answer to that. Bertarelli. They're on the hill, on Marconi. It is a terrific family business. And I'm going to jump back for just a second to the knives. In my house, where nobody cooks, and even if you don't cook, there's really no excuse for what we did, and that's going 40 years without ever having a knife sharpened or a pair of scissors sharpened. There's no way those knives could do what they're supposed to do, and we found that out once we took them in and had them sharpened at Bertarelli and bought another pair of steak knives. And we got home, and the first thing that I cut with those new knives, it was incredible. It was like, oh, this is what a knife is supposed to do. You don't have to saw at it like now a good knife, you don't have to do that. So if you've never been in the store, and thank you to those of you who have emailed me and said never, ever bothered to go to Bertarelli. And like the letter I read yesterday, the email yesterday from the guy drove from St. Charles with his wife, said worth every mile to see this incredible, terrific family business, Bertarelli. So whether it's for PPE, for knife sharpening, knife purchasing, And I don't even have time. One day we'll do the whole commercial on the refurbished mixers and meat slicers that they sell to supermarkets and schools. And you know what I'm talking about, those giant mixers where they make, you could mix concrete in them. So that's what Bertarelli is, that's who they are, and that's what they're about. BertarelliCo.com, and I know it's not the easiest name to spell. Don't have to worry about it. Facebook.com/AM and the PM or FrankOpinion.com. And there's a link right to their website. I'm so glad they came on board. I'd like to keep them on board. That's up to you. We only keep our advertisers if you let them know that this show is the reason you came. So if you'll do that for us, we should be able to stick around for a while. Bertarelli, cutlery and more.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law, who is right, who is wrong, who is for and who's against the law?
Scott Sherman is with us. He is an attorney, and he helps you at no charge. He's helped a lot of people, and I know not just from sitting here listening to the phone calls, but I get emails every week. Multiple times a week from people who tell me what Scott has been able to do for them with their legal issues, and he's here to do it for you. Here are our numbers. There's only one caller waiting. Wow. Two lines open. They're all yours. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Sherman.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, guys.
Now, before we get to the first caller, an earlier caller, Dave, I think was his name, brought up an interesting question, and that is why don't we have a name for your segment? Do you want a name for this segment?
It's up to you.
I think it needs a name.
I think the song makes the name. I think it really is This Side of the Law.
This Side of the Law.
And it's perfect. So with all due respect to Dave, I don't think it needs one.
Okay.
If you come up with one, I will accept whatever name you...
We've made it 5 years without a name for the segment.
In August,
Doug,
you are
Dr.
right.
Dr. Doug's segment doesn't have a name.
Right.
Think about it.
And then when you say Dr. Doug, I hear how much is that doggy in the window.
Josh Bauman's segment doesn't have a name. It's not called the Josh Bauman Show or segment. So see, maybe not necessary.
You just say the tech segment. That's it.
That's it. Are you ready to help people?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's start with Jay. And Jay is very smart. He called earlier and he's been holding for a while and he's been a very patient person. We appreciate that. Jay, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, how you doing, Scott?
Great. How are you, Jay?
Good. Hey, I've got a quick question. Illinois came out with some new laws the other day. One of them was about curriculum in school. And they're going to teach the history of LGBTQ. My question is, I don't want my 7-year-old. I don't know when they're going to teach it, what age groups, whatever the new law says. But I don't want my 7-year-old son learning about this stuff. I know it's my decision. I know he's in a public school. I will probably request to have, you know, hey, I don't want my son in this when they do it, but What are my options if they do teach my son this? I just don't want him in there, you know.
Jay, let me if you don't mind, first of all, I think you speak for thousands and thousands of parents. How old is your son?
My youngest son is 7.
And when would they be teaching him this? At what age?
I don't know yet. That's the thing. All I know is that it's been put in that Illinois will begin teaching history of LGBTQ, whatever.
Okay, first of all, what history? LGBTQ doesn't go back, but what, 10 years? I mean, what the heck? What history? It's not like the Civil War. And here's the other thing. For you to step up and voice your opposition to this, you know that people like you, people like me, are perceived by some people as haters and homophobes simply because there are certain things that we don't want our kids at young ages to have to be confused about or try to understand. So I absolutely understand your concern. Look, nobody can argue that sex education is an important thing, but at a certain age. And a lot of parents don't want their children being shown how to put on a condom at 8 years old or something. So how, that's a great question, Scott. What does he do if he finds out that his son is being, and when I say being taught about the LGBTQ community, we don't know what it is they're saying about it. We don't know what they're teaching yet. What does he do to opt out of that?
I think Jay's best move is to say that he is uncomfortable. He and his wife, whoever's raising his son, are uncomfortable that it is age inappropriate to be talking about things that involve sexuality or gender identity. It's just too young, and if it's something they're doing in the elementary school or the middle school even, that he wants an opt-out. I would talk to the superintendent of the school because that's the person that makes the curriculum for the district and couch it as, I'm not against this particular
group,
people, right, but it involves sexuality and sexual identity. My kid it's inappropriate for this age, and see what the ages are. If they're teaching this in 10th grade, or, you know, 11th grade, that's different. But third graders and first graders should not be involved in any of this stuff.
You know, it's kind of like there's a certain age where a child is too young to have to try to understand childbirth. There's a reason that somebody came up with the whole stork thing. All right, it's ridiculous, but when you take a young child, 4, 5, 6 years old, and you try to explain how a baby is born and comes out of the birth canal, that's a little young for that.
Calculus.
It's confusing to kids.
Calculus is too advanced for me, but for a 7-year-old. But you wouldn't teach calculus in first grade, and you shouldn't teach this because it's just not appropriate. Their brains and their social sort of development are not ready for the birds and the bees
school. Jay's question about it, or his opposition to it, is going to be misinterpreted as hate. It is.
Jay, I think that I would consider myself, and by most people that know me, to be considered a pretty open person, especially about this LGBT rights thing.
Right,
I was very out in front of it before the Supreme Court took it up. If you run into any pushback in your expressing yourself that this is age inappropriate, you let me know, and I will go with you or communicate with the superintendent for free. I am not against. I just think that I believe you as a parent. You know, sort of. My girlfriend's got kids that are in elementary school. One of them's going to go in the 4th grade. I would be completely against them teaching this, not because of the position or any kind of their point of view, which is because they're not ready to talk about this stuff in public school.
One other thing, and Scott, I think you'll agree with this, and Jay, you will too. Strength in numbers. You don't have to do it alone, because I promise you, you're not the only parent who would object to this. And as we've seen, protesters getting their way, sometimes it's ridiculous, but numbers. Get some other parents to go with you on this, and I don't think you'll have any trouble doing that.
And it's got to be a time, place, and manner. It's not that you don't want this in the district. It's you don't want this in elementary school.
Right.
I think it's a very reasonable position to take.
Yeah. You're not alone.
Very good.
Hi,
Jay. The part of the thing when you said, you know, numbers and and so on and so forth. That's part of my beef with it. I'm not against it. People can do what they want. It's America. That's why we're here. But it seems to be like it's being pushed as like it's a normal thing. And I don't necessarily agree with that, because the LGBTQ community is actually a very, very, very small percentage of our population.
Right.
And it seems like it's being pushed to make it something that is completely normal, to teach our children that this is normal, these are normal things. And no, I do not hate anyone for it. Like I said, I just don't want my son, like you guys have spoken.
Well, think of it this way. Think of it this way, so that you're not perceived as a hater. Use this analogy with them. Nobody hates sex, okay? Sex is what keeps the world populated, yet you don't want graphic sexual depictions and explanations thrown at your third grader. So right. It's no different. It's no different.
And, Jay, would you, if they made it part of the health class curriculum in the 10th grade, would you have an objection to that?
No, not at all, because okay. I also have a son that's going to be a senior this year. And my son actually wants to be an attorney, to be honest with you. He is very well informed. We have the same values and views, and he's basically a young man now. Yeah. And at the 10th grade level, as a parent, you should have already expressed what your thoughts are and your views, and that child that's becoming an adult slowly at that age is starting to make decisions and see what's real, what's fake, what the world is like at that point.
No, I think you're on the right track. Everything you said makes sense to me.
I appreciate the help.
Hi, Jay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd just like to add this. Here's a class that doesn't exist, I don't think, but it should. A class on hate. Think about it. There should be a class that every student, it's mandatory, you have to attend a class on hate, with an explanation of hate. Where does hate come from? Why do people hate? Why do these people hate these people? And maybe if we take a closer look at hate, we could start to eliminate it, when we realized how ridiculous it is in most cases, and how it's not something you inherently grow up doing. You're taught to hate. Maybe we could teach not to hate. And maybe it's a pipe dream, and I'm just out of my mind for thinking that, but couldn't hurt to try. Let's go to Jim. Jim, welcome to 590. The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Well, hi, Scott. Hi, Frank. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet, Jim.
Hi, Jim. Yeah. How are you?
Hi. Great. Hey, real quick, I work for a company that gives us company cars, and They get it through a leasing company, and when it's time to trade the cars, then they give us an option to buy them. So I took that option working with the leasing company. They requested a cashier's check from the bank to pay for it, which I don't have any problem doing. So I got one. I mailed it. I tracked it when it was getting mailed, and the leasing company was in Chicago, and it stopped tracking once it got to Chicago. And then, of course, I found out that somebody grabbed the check, defaced it, and put somebody else's name on it, and they cashed it. So I got my bank involved here, and they're doing everything they can. They're getting their criminal department in. And then, of course, I got the U.S. Postal Service involved, because it looks like it potentially could have happened at one of their DCs. My question is when I talk to the bank, and yes, we got our criminal team involved, and we're going after the check, but I said, that's great. When will I get my money? And they won't ever answer that. They'll say, look, we're doing everything we can to get your money, but I don't feel like there's an outside chance that if they don't get the money, I'm out of it. And I'm just wondering, is that true, or can I hold them liable, both them as well as the bank that cashed it, because it's blatantly been defaced. It's ridiculous that they even cashed a check. And, of course, I have a copy of it, and I have a copy of my original one. And I'm just wondering, do I have a leg to stand on?
My layman's answer to this, and I'll turn it over to Scott, is yes, you do, and you will get your money. It's just the process. It always takes too long. But there's no way in the end you're going to lose that money, Scott.
Yeah, I'm with you on this, Frank. As far as the timetable goes, have you talked to anybody at the U.S. Attorney's Office or the Postal Service Criminal Investigations Unit about this case? since you're a victim of this?
Yeah, the U.S. Postal Inspector's Office. They called me already, and the general, you know, they're already working with me on it.
Post office gets a lot of flack, but one of the things that they really do well as I don't know how they can figure out whose handwriting, how to get it delivered anywhere, especially mine, is that their criminal investigation department is excellent about mail fraud, and this is a form of mail fraud. I think they would have to hold, as a negligent actor here, the bank on which this fraudulent forged check was cashed, because it's ridiculous on its face, you said it was defaced, for that check to just scratch it out and write in crayon, you know, Joe Smith, instead of instead of that lending company, without checking it. So it's not just a fraudulent act by the bad actor. It's a negligent act on the bank for not looking at this and having a question. So there is insurance on these accounts, FDIC insurance. This insurance claim should be made by your bank, demanded upon the other bank through their FDIC carrier, to reimburse your account without you having to sit and wait for this fool to be prosecuted. I would talk to your branch manager at your bank and say, I want to know when that money is going to be in my account because of the negligence of the cashing bank. And if you don't get a straight answer within next week, that it's going to be in a couple of weeks, I would call the investigator at the Postal Service and say, I'm not so sure that the people at that bank, this is not an inside job. That's not to put them on the heat. But how is it that you were not compensated, one of the victims here, when this is clearly a fraud that clearly should never have been cashed? So I would get on them, your branch manager. I think tomorrow's not a bank holiday. I'd be on the phone with your branch manager tomorrow. Where is my money? You are screwing up my car deal. You are screwing up my account. And I want that money in my account. Figure it out. And have them figure it out. And then next week I'd be back on the phone after the holiday with the investigator from the Postal Service and say, it is very strange that my account has not been replenished when there's insurance for this. And put the heat on these people, because I'll tell you what, if the person who cashed this check or whatever, if it was out of their account or your branch manager, that money would have been back. You didn't just sit and wait. Right. So this is, everybody here is a victim, but you're the one with the short pockets, and I'd be on the phone making noise tomorrow.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Fine, Jim. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your help.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Off we go to Tom. Tom, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing well. AM and the PM.
Thank you.
My question is, with this tomorrow in the city and the county, you have to wear a mask, correct?
Well, that's what they say, yeah. 7 o'clock in the morning, starting.
Well, my dad has a business. And he ain't going for it. So what happens to him?
That's a really good question, because there are no mask police.
That's what he asked me today. He goes, is the mask police going to come and arrest me?
I believe, and Scott will take it from here, I believe if push comes to shove and they wanted to, they could shut his business down. Scott?
Yeah, I didn't read the ordinance, but this has happened in Texas. It's happened in Michigan. It's happened in a couple places where they just kind of pick somebody, like a haircut place or a barbershop. Yeah, and then eventually it sort of gets dropped. But if your dad gets a summons or they write him a ticket for not wearing the mask, it would be an ordinance violation. My guess is that just like getting a speeding ticket, you could get it to a lawyer and they'd probably amend it. The question becomes this: how much heat does your dad's small business want by making a TV appearance or doing that? I would say this: they'll probably give him a warning before they shut anything down. So if he doesn't want to do it, I'd say just don't do it. But the question was, what could they do? Could they give him a summons? Yeah. Could they shut it down? Yeah. But the question for your dad's business and for your dad is, how far is he willing to go with his position? And if he's willing to go all the way, then the only thing they could do to him would be what the statute says.
And don't forget, St. Louis County filed suit against House of Payne for violating the order not to open their business, which this would be, which would be an ordinance violation as well. And they wanted them to pay for a COVID test for every customer that came in through their door. Whoa. Before they finally settled out of court.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that the problem that exists, in my opinion, for this caller is that he may suffer legal fees. And is that worth it?
That's the question. So I don't want to give sort of a diagnosis of this ordinance until I've read it. But my guess is that there are provisions in it. They probably took it from somebody else. I will go look at it, but I suggest this for your dad. Before he becomes the martyr for the mask or not mask cause, look up the ordinance and read it and say, is this worth 50 grand? Is this worth 100 grand? Your insurance isn't going to cover this. This is going to be a legal thing. Is it worth 10?
And
it is a bit of, you know, sort of, you know, I don't know, governmental bullying.
He needs to know what the consequences are. I look at it like this, Tom. I go in places all the time where it says no concealed weapons, and I have a gun. But I know what the consequences are, and I know how the law works, and here's the way it works. The first thing they do is they ask you to leave and take it out of the building. You come back without it. Okay. That's okay. I'm okay. And I think the second time around, there's like a $100 fine. But I know that. In your dad's case, he doesn't know what they might be able to do. And I agree with Scott. He needs to look into that. Now what will happen here is if your dad digs in and goes, to hell with these masks. I'm not wearing them, and my customer's not going to wear them. He initially is going to get some support from the people that go, yeah, I'm going there because I don't like masks either. But that's not going to do him any good if they close his business.
And when House of Payne did what they did, Sam Page, the St. Louis County executive, said, well, be careful and get yourself some good legal advice because, A, your general liability insurance might not cover an incident that occurs in your place of business if you violate this. And, B, I don't know what kind of business your dad has, but you may not be eligible for relicensure if you're required to get licensed because you blatantly violate orders. Wow. That's what he threatened during a press conference a couple months ago.
That insurance thing is a great point.
It's huge because the difference between paying a claim and defending it, the right of defense and the right of payment, is different. Let's say your dad says, I'm going to fight this thing because I have insurance. I don't care if I lose. Well, hidden in that is if he does get sued, will his insurer pay the legal fees? You might not only lose on the case and get hit with an ordinance or a compounding ordinance or something, you might also have to pay your own legal fees. So if your dad is the guy that is ready to fight this and challenge it and go all the way as high as it is, give him this number. It's going to be about $100,000, and it may not be covered by insurance. If you get it up to the Missouri Supreme Court, you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars worth of legal bills, maybe $50,000 worth of appellate bills, and if you end up losing, maybe another 50 for the other side. So I'm not saying just bow down and do whatever they say, but the consequences for not dealing with it or continuing to be sort of obstinate about it is it could cost you a ton of money. If he's willing to do that, good for him. That's why we have a court system. If he really believes it. But what could happen? Everything Tim said, everything Frank said, everything I said, and more.
Tom, one last thing. Can you tell us what kind of business it is? Just an idea.
He's a mechanic. He owns his own little shop. It's a two-bay shop.
Okay, and he only comes in contact with, obviously, just customers one by one. It's not like he's in a deli or something. Well,
no.
Then there's a lot smaller chance of this, but here's something else that could happen. Somebody could claim they got COVID or their dad got COVID because he went in there and they didn't comply with the mask policy. Now you got that to deal with. It's great to dig in and stand your ground. Until it's not a great idea.
And there's a much more economical way is look at the ordinance and see what it really says. Does it say that employees have to wear a mask? Does it say that customers do? And is there a way that you can make it the way that some businesses have sort of adapted to this by making it as touchless and as sort of socially distant as possible. If there's a way to do it so that you can't get in trouble with customers by having to make appointments or drop the car off and, you know, I don't know, walk around three times or whatever the kabuki dance is for this, make sure that this ordinance doesn't say what your dad thinks it says but doesn't. Is it really about the workers? I don't know because I need to read it.
My take on this thing is, at least the way I hear it, is that starting tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, everybody in the city and county has to wear a mask in any business, any public place, whether you work there or you're a patron. Everybody. That's the way I hear it.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people in jail because
that brings us to this. There's no way they can police this. No. And keep up. But here's the other issue, Tom. Let's say your dad has a competitor, and he realizes Tom's dad is not complying. He's going to snitch. He's going to run as fast as he can to somebody he thinks can padlock your dad's business because competitors can play dirty.
That's, yeah.
Well, yeah, but not where he's at.
Okay.
He's like the mayor of, I call him the mayor of North County, but he's...
Well, you know what I do? Here's what I do. I'm your dad, okay? I'll do whatever I want to do. I don't want a mask. Customers don't have to wear masks until I get that first notice. And that's what will happen first. He'll get some kind of notice that says, hey, then you stop. Run the clock out as long as you can until they stop you. I'm not saying do that. I'm saying that's something he could do, and he's not going to go to prison, you know?
That's probably what he's going to do, and I don't know. He's on vacation next week, so we'll find out the week after, and I'll call and let you know how it's going.
Okay.
Very good. The first one with the cameras at their business is the first one that's going to get cited. So let somebody else take the shrapnel, and you guys figure out a way that your dad is comfortable with, and I'll have an update next week on the mask stuff. So if it says what it appears to say, good luck enforcing it.
Yeah, well, and the snitchers are going to go after the Targets and the Walmarts and places like that before they're going to go after his little dad's two-bay mechanic shop.
That's right.
They go where the money is. All right, Tom, thank you. Good luck.
Thank you. Have a nice holiday.
All right, you too. I believe Dave is next. Dave, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hey, Scott, I am in the PM.
Hi, Dave.
You and Dr. Doug are my two favorite segments. I really enjoy them.
That's awesome. Dr. Doug is my favorite, so...
Here's the deal. I'll take full responsibility for this because I'm old, this story I'm going to tell you here. But in the past month, I have made two internet purchases, and I had been solicited through Facebook ads, you know, and it popped up, and so I went ahead and made two purchases. And I don't want the money back because I know I'll never get it, but my question is, when you get involved in an internet purchase that turns out to be fraud, and they take your money and they don't ever deliver a product, how do they get away with doing that, Scott? I mean, I've talked to people for the past month that have had the same thing happen to them. It's apparently very common. This one outfit is called Wish.com, and I Google them after I send them my money, and it's known all over the Internet that these people just take your money and send you nothing.
My daughter just went through that, too, trying to buy me something.
Dave, can I ask what you ordered?
Wish.com. I ordered a Western belt buckle.
Okay.
And then the other thing was Ariat, if I'm saying the name right, Ariat boots. I've been buying their boots for years.
Yeah.
And it turned out that this ad pops up for Ariat, and I sent them, made an order for some shoes and sent the money, and it went to Portugal, and it wasn't even Ariat boots. It was just a fraud.
And it's on Facebook, too. I mean, these ads pop up on Facebook.
I'm going through the same thing now. I ordered something 3 months ago, haven't gotten it. And what I have been able to accomplish, though, is I made the purchase through PayPal. And PayPal is an excellent way of voicing displeasure with a vendor who is ripping you off, and then they will investigate. And both times this has happened to me, and it took a while. Patience is the game. It took about 60-plus days, but I got my money back because I submitted the complaint through the way that I paid them.
Tim's right, Dave. I hate to say it, but he is. That's exactly what I was going to say. The pay service is the key. Facebook is useless. This is one of the dumbest and most dangerous things you could ever get yourself involved with. And I don't care what Mark Zuckerberg thinks. This thing is awful. People can say whatever they want on there. They commit acts of defamation constantly. They make terrible claims against people. They use the thing as a platform to rip people off. And Facebook, frankly, does nothing. I have a client that the horrible things, false things have been said. Facebook won't do anything without a court order. They won't stop these fraudulent out-of-the-country rip-off artists, these scams that go through mostly sub-Saharan African countries. They are all over the globe, and if you are making purchases through Facebook that are not face-to-face, sort of local Facebook marketplace transactions where you meet the people somewhere and you do a hand transaction, you are taking a huge risk. It's not your fault. I would call the FBI and say, look, I know it's not a lot of money here, but in the aggregate, it's billions of dollars. This place needs to be shut down, and somebody needs to tell Mark Zuckerberg and his cabal there at Facebook that it's time to start policing this for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the fraud that goes on.
Because there's no way Dave is the only guy.
That's right.
Company
this is how they make do their business. If you're not using what Tim said, like PayPal, or you're not using a third party, PayPal is, you know, great because it's a third party sort of confirmation money exchange. That until the good is delivered, the money doesn't get released to the vendor. And, you know, I guess Amazon is okay because you're doing it directly through them. But if you're on Facebook buying stuff out of your zip code or out or area code or out of this driving area, you are making a huge mistake. And Facebook does nothing about it. And until they step it up.
Can you imagine how much money these people are making?
Yeah. How much was your belt? How many were your boots? A couple hundred bucks?
$150 for the boots.
Yeah, and $150 billion dollars. That would be a billion pairs of fake boots. They've got more people that they know how to scam, and there are people that get scammed out of millions of dollars with fake real estate investments, promises of, you know, not just the old my son is locked up in a Turkish prison, but all kinds of fake transactions. It is time for people to stop using Facebook first for transactions. Completely.
Isn't it true that sometimes, though, it's next to impossible to find these people?
Well, it's
they're
next to
impossible. They're so good at hiding.
That it's next to impossible. But it's not impossible if the United States Department of Justice gets together and says hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of American citizens have been just ripped off. And that's not fair when you go to an American-based company that says, well, I don't know what to tell you there, Dave. Should have been more careful. That's BS. Right. Then here's the next thing. Coca-Cola, I think there are, I think Ford, and I think other companies now have taken off, at least temporarily, their internet advertising on Facebook. Why? Because it has run amok. And I'm outraged in the aggregate, not just for Dave and his boots, but for the people that really believe that they are buying something and they trust Facebook. Don't trust Facebook.
Yeah. Well, you know what else was a laugh is I called my bank when this happened because I had to cancel the bank card. And they said, well, you can turn in a report and we'll try to get you the money back. Because I didn't get a checkout receipt like any legitimate purchase, they email you a receipt. Neither one of these purchases ever sent me any paperwork. I couldn't tell the people what I bought with any detail at the credit card company. So they said, well, we can't process any kind of a complaint. You can't get your money back because you don't know what you bought. I mean, I knew what I bought, but they wanted size.
I'd take that to the fraud department on top of it. And also, you're exposed now. Who knows what they know about the banking transaction numbers?
Well, I had to cancel it. Right.
Right, because now they get one bit of transaction. They can say they get $50 for, you know, not the boots, but the belt buckle or whatever.
Right.
Now they've got other information from you. They call to confirm something. Now they clean you out. It's time to stop. Everybody, stop doing transactions with a lot of these foreign operations.
I think you were right. I think it's Amazon.com is the only way to go. I mean, I've never
PayPal works because PayPal does confirm and doesn't release the funds until the product is not only delivered but is confirmed
or whatever. Yeah.
Accepted as the proper item. So PayPal is good and Amazon is good. Facebook is bad, and if Coca-Cola is taking their advertising down, you know that they got problems at Facebook.
I agree. All right. I'll get off, guys. Have a good weekend.
Okay,
be careful.
Thank you. And very quickly, I don't use PayPal, but I also don't make purchases online that are more than, like $60. I mean, I don't spend hundreds per purchase. At one time I had PayPal a long time ago, and I don't even remember how I stopped using it.
The good thing about PayPal, in my opinion, is that that vendor who still hasn't sent me my chipping wedge
won't get his money.
Well, they have to have a legitimate, verifiable bank account for all the sales that they make that come through PayPal. PayPal has to send the money to a bank account, so they're going to keep that line of communication. Yeah, keep sending it to this account. And on the occasion a guy like me or the caller or anybody else wants to refund, PayPal, by virtue, has a right to suck money out of that account if they investigate and realize that a complaint is valid.
Tim, did they ever get the money, or did they just never deliver the goods?
They kept sending me shipping orders saying, "Oh, you're stuck in customs in China, and now it's in Thailand, and now it's in this place, and now," and they would never tell me what an expected date of receipt was. And finally, after 60 days, and I did have a receipt showing that I purchased it, I screenshotted it and saved it to an email folder. PayPal finally said, "We concur with your, and here's your money," and they put a credit on my PayPal account.
And so that is the good thing about PayPal. Because I don't want to trash all of these people, because that is a good, solid, third-party verification system. Mm-hmm. Facebook sucks. The way they do business is as fraudulent as the pictures that people post of their profile pictures. They are not to be trusted.
And the problem with the things that Facebook constantly tries to sell me is when you click on the product, you have no idea what country you're buying it from. Yep. I mean, you have to almost be a forensic investigator to figure out where the origin of this item is going to be, whether it's a shirt or a golf club or anything in between.
And Frank, you wouldn't believe.
Even if they told you, it might not be true.
Well, if they told me, it certainly would be an impact on whether or not I made that decision.
But they could lie about telling you where it came from. Well, I mean, think about it.
I agree.
Made in the USA.
Frank, you wouldn't believe the things that somebody posted on Facebook about my client that were false. And Facebook will do nothing, and they throw their hands up and say, "Well, without a court order, we can't take it down." Some of the most disgusting, just defamatory things, and they won't help you at all. I don't know why anybody uses it.
This is why I don't like Facebook. It's why our show has a page, but I don't have, personally, a Facebook page. I don't like anything that offers people a forum or a platform to hate and trash other people and lie about other people. I don't like that. Who would? Let's go to Dawn. We have a line open real quickly. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Dawn, thank you for waiting. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi. You know me. My husband and I had our wills done through your company.
Oh, very good.
Lawyers there.
Yeah, hi.
Dawn and John.
Dawn and John. Hi.
Well, anyway.
The other thing,
I'm sorry. And I'm AM and the PM.
Well, see.
And the Facebook, if anybody posts anything on Facebook that is COVID related but not according to the general public, like it goes against the general philosophy, they take it off immediately.
Unbelievable. They'll take that off.
They'll take that off.
But they won't take off
Frank,
defamatory.
When I tell you what these people said, I'm not going to say it on the air because I will not re-disseminate this. It is one of the worst things you can say about a human being, and they will do nothing about it. They'll say, the only thing they'll take down is if you incite violence, according to them. Incite violence. But anything else goes.
Go ahead, Dawn. My question is this. In early December, I bought tickets because I'm an Elvis freak. Love Elvis Presley. I like Steve and everybody. And we bought tickets for River City that was supposed to be in May. Well, they canceled the ticket. They postponed it until August.
Okay.
Well, now at River City, you have to wear a mask 24/7. Unless you're eating, drinking, smoking. And I don't really want to go to a concert that I'm going to have to wear a mask.
I don't blame
you. Aside from that, my husband has severe COPD. He cannot wear a mask for any length
of time. By the way, do you know that those people are excluded? If all your husband needs is something from a doctor that says he has, and he won't have to. I just read that this morning.
Well, you know, I don't know where you read it because I even have insurance I bought insurance just in case, you know, because the tickets weren't really cheap. And the ticket company and the insurance said that there's a waiver you cannot claim because it's because of the qualifications for the COVID. You cannot say you can't go because of what they're making you do because of COVID.
What I'm saying is you're exempt from the mask. I read this morning. It was on the Google News. They have a local section that had St. Louis County, St. Louis City, and they had the whole thing about tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. But then there was a section in there that said people with respiratory problems, and they mentioned COPD, will not be forced to wear masks because it hinders them from being able to breathe. So you'd still have to wear one. That's a drag. And,
right.
Yeah.
But, well, really, I shouldn't have to wear one because I have lung cancer.
Well, that's, yeah.
I do have breathing problems. But what I don't like is the idea is the fact that I bought these tickets in good faith without COVID.
Right.
There was no COVID then.
Right.
Now,
I think Dawn's right. I think Dawn could get her money back because she could say this. I'm not comfortable going to this, period. She doesn't have to get into the mask thing. I'm not comfortable going to this venue. It is dangerous, and I didn't bargain for this risk when I bought these tickets in December. You guys cannot change the rules on me. My deal originally in December of 2019, before we knew about this COVID, was that this event was going to take place in May of 2020. You've changed it. And now you got a bunch of rules here. I'm not abiding by them. Give me my money back.
Most of the sports leagues and concert venues and organizers haven't been giving people their money back unless the event's actually been canceled. The Cardinals gave all the people their money back for games canceled in April, and then they waited until May was over to gain their May ticket money back. In this event, apparently hasn't been canceled, and I think she's going to struggle.
Not yet.
I think she's going to win, and I'll tell you why. I think that this change is not foreseeable. And so on a rain check or a reschedule on an event, you just reschedule the event like a rain check and you get to go to the game in August if it rains out in April. In this case, it's not only a rescheduling, it's a whole new bunch of regulations. She's got to wear a mask now, and they got to sit 6 feet away from people, and 100,000+
people
have died.
Yeah, you would never have bought the tickets if you knew that.
Yes, that's right. They have fundamentally, materially changed the contract.
We're out of time.
I think she wins.
We're out of time, but Dawn, I just want to
get in touch.
I want to make
me.
Sure of one thing. You said you're an Elvis fan. I hope you didn't buy tickets to see Elvis. You know he's dead.
Not according to my granddaughter.
Oh, okay. No, he's not dead.
Send me an email, Dawn. We'll get you out of this deal.
All right.
Great.
Dawn, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Wow. Once again, a fast hour. Scott Sherman, everybody.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Scott.
Happy 4th, everybody.
You too. And remember, don't just keep holding the firecracker after you light it. You need to release it. Throw it. That's just a firecracker tip. Well, after the news, it's Playhouse time. Oh, and today we're going to take more time than normal with Mike Evans because he wants to tell us a couple of Mike Evans stories about his life. And I think you'll find that he's had a very bizarre and interesting life. So that's coming up. 5 o'clock, 590 The Fan.
590 The Fan, with your local talents covering your St. Louis teams. KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the protection of U.S. troops should be a top priority. During a Capitol briefing, Pelosi argued that it's not happening, and she called it very disappointing. Before the briefing, Pelosi and other congressional leaders got a classified briefing on the reports that Russia put bounties on the heads of U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. The former girlfriend of disgraced financier Jeff